This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So good afternoon, everyone. It's hard to believe it's Wednesday and we're on the fifth day, but here we are. We're all still here. It's good, always good. So I'd like to begin with some reflections on yesterday's discussion of anger. What people brought up was really wise and subtle, I thought, and it gave me some things to reflect on. So I'd like to share those with you. Because anger is such a big topic, it comes from our DNA, our ancient natures. And we're going to acknowledge that tomorrow at the full moon ceremony, which is, I think it's at 1:40. Anyway, it's on the schedule. And if you can join that, that would be wonderful. We usually do it outside. And I don't think that's going to work this time necessarily. But if you're outside, it's usually done in a circle outside. But we have our virtual circle here. So people mention things, and I'll just mention a few of them. Pamela brought in the power of examining anger. And as I understood her, our own anger, each of us, and the anger of others, in order to understand how it works in us as individuals and in the large body of us as others. And Kathy and Susan mentioned in different ways, not turning away from anger, our own or others, and seeing and feeling in an embodied sense how destructive it is. And Michael brought in words from Coben, which I don't recall exactly, and I will try to get those from him later. But what struck me was Coben's words on anger had this key phrase of measuring self and other, which is also what I pick up from Shanti Deva's words on anger. So I also want to point out that we're reading selected verses, and Shanti Deva has much more to say, and so it's not the full picture. And some of them are, I wanted to speak a bit about the language. Some of them are really that language of that's very dramatic and very, you know, the putrefactions of the body and things that are done in the early text and also carried into the Mahayana and the Vajrayana, Tibetan Buddhism. But he also talks about different psychological ways that we deal with anger. And laziness and lust in chapter 7 and 8, and we're going to be looking a little bit at the laziness part today. I left the lust out. Chapter 8, a meditation, it's a lot. So we have very selected verses there. But his focus is always what I thought I heard from Coben's words is on a big delusion, a big misunderstanding, the sense of separate self, how we measure ourselves against others. And it's a root delusion that he goes on and to explore and expound on in the ninth chapter, Wisdom. It's a root delusion of how we actually know the world we live in. And it gives rise to attachment, either clinging attachment or pushing away attachment, and to specific forms of the kleshas, which early Buddhism also talks about, the kilesas, the hindrances, Those are sensual desire. He talks a lot about that. Ill will and anger. Sloth and torpor. That's what he gets into, the laziness piece. Restlessness, worry, and doubt. So what I really want to emphasize is that seeing our enemy as a benefactor and being patient does not mean abandoning moral clarity. Shantideva was a man of his time, as we are, creatures of our time. And he uses the language of warriors destroying, subduing. And he also uses a cosmology, which we haven't picked up a lot of those verses, but he certainly has a lot of them. The cosmology and philosophy of multiple endless lifetimes. So that's part of the context of patience. And I feel the long view is really important for me and for practice in our limited human lives, but yet it can't be used as a, oh, well, I'll take care of that in the next lifetime. And I want to emphasize that we didn't bring this up specifically, but because of the times we live in, I want to emphasize that we need to be strong in meeting social and historical ill will and lust for power. I mean, we see that playing out in just a little over a month ago. If we don't, we'll be overtaken by these destructive behaviors. So we need to really be clear about them, because many sentient beings suffer the consequences. That's what we saw and what we continue to see unfolding in our nation's capital. So if we don't meet it and we don't call it out, in some ways, at least acknowledge it to ourselves, hopefully that could give us, and this is not a should, but maybe we will be called to, we are all aspiring bodhisattvas, and maybe we will be called to generating bodhicitta in some form or another, to meet these angers and destructive behaviors in our society. Years of moral equivalence and led actually to destruction and death, and we have to be clear about that, I think. And the Black Lives Movement and the Me Too movement have, whatever you think of them in socio-political terms, they have seen and felt and experienced the consequences of unbridled lust, greed, and ill will. And really, the root of all is delusion. And when it's not called out by those in power, including the media, we see the consequences of that. So I just want to leave that there and go on to our chapters today, which are effort, which I could say is upright practice. We could call it upright practice. That's really effort, just sitting up and being here, showing up for the sittings. And then we'll discuss a little Shantideva's specific, the wonderful phrases he has for the manifestations of laziness. And he's talking about always through these chapters, and the later chapters particularly, talking about exchanging self for other. And I heard a phrase from Norman Fisher that just encapsulated this so clearly and simply. He said, "Enlightenment is basically being unselfish." I thought that was, that's when we just can put the other one first. That's also something we know deep inside us, and maybe we've heard that in one way or another when we were young, and we can think that's a should, because we do have that strong tendency. On the other hand, you know, people who do research with infants, really 1 year old, there's also a strong propensity to share and to reach out without the mother, you know, or, you know, saying, go ahead, do that, you know, go ahead, share. No, the cameras are going, the babies are in the crawling around, there are the toys, and they are wanting to exchange. So that's the place we need to kind of connect with, in one way, we could say. So how do we embody these precepts? How do we really end this bodhicitta? That's a really big question, because it sounds abstract in a certain sense, like bodhicitta, here's a big idea. And actually we can have these experiences that it just comes to us with simply shikantaza. And words don't get to it, but we have many great teachers who left us a lot of words. Dogen, it seems to me, gets it to it by turning the whole Indra's net kind of around, or this mandala, or which is a three-dimensional mandala, a spherical one, through poetic images and words. And so that may be one way that can take us there to listen to those words and feel them in ourselves. But really, you can't tell anyone how to feel. So there are practices, not so much in Zen, but I was inspired by Mike's talk last summer, or maybe late spring, about Tonglen practice. He actually brought that practice in. I think it's probably in the Jikoji Dharma files somewhere. So I won't bring a practice in today, but I will just briefly mention one. Directly cultivating when we're in meditation, cultivating bringing a person to mind, or an animal, or a planet, or a forest, or whatever you find is touching you that you would like to share some of your time with in meditation as generating bodhicitta for this being, this thing. Really, everything I mentioned is a sentient being. So that's one way to bring that in, directly cultivating. So embodying in a way. Another way is to think of concrete moments when people were kind to you and returned that kindness to them. Another way would be to call to mind people that are your benefactors, people that have helped you, and spend a little while just cultivating that wish of wishing them the benefits of bodhicitta, the benefits of freedom from suffering, complete freedom from suffering. And then you can also call the people who mind people. And this is where this is somewhat aligned with the metta practice from the early tradition, who are in distress, who are suffering, and really wish them well. And feel as much as you can. And again, it can't be a forced practice, but it just might be something that you might want to try on, might want to see if it works for you, if it helps. Often when one does these practices, things begin to shift and they spontaneously arise, so that in a way you aren't doing them anymore. It's like mindfulness, like being aware. It's just present. And not that you won't slip, and not that your mindfulness will be constant. I mean, I remember when I first started Buddhist practice, I thought, that's what the Buddha did. He was mindful every moment of his life at a certain point. Just that. That was what I thought then. And likewise, your bodhicitta, you can still get pretty angry at someone when somebody cuts you off on the freeway and things like that. But just stepping back, that bit of and non-self-identification, as much as you can remember that, whatever phrase you have. This is not I. This is not her and I. This is not him and I. Just sometimes that's enough to help you in our lives, because this is what I understand is why we're doing this sesshin. Sesshin training is also been studied by researchers, and it really has a benefit of conditioning the mind to look at deeper states of compassion and even wisdom, but definitely on the psychological level and the neurochemical level, the neurological level. It works that way. And daily practice too, they all go together. It's a sesshin practice is really important to overcome laziness. it's a little funny to be, for me anyway, to be in this virtual sesshin, but in when you are in person, there's no chance for you to be lazy. You have to show up. you're part of the whole. You're part of the whole thing, and everybody's working together, and it's working beautifully that way. In this sesshin, thanks to Jen, who's keeping track of all that. So I want to talk a little bit about laziness. In the first verse, indolence. I wanted to just unpack that a bit because that's a kind of a big word. It's that kind of sense for me of, oh, why bother? I'm in the hammock now, and I'm just, oh, why bother? And then the laziness of being attracted to non-virtuous actions, that's most principally for me in our culture now, for me and many others, it's distractions. And we know that that all of the beauty and wonder and positive virtues of technology also have the other side, where they are, and actually the people that own the technology in many cases are kind of conditioning us to be distracted, to get the notifications, or it can just be like, depends on how far you want to take it. You have your own way of knowing what non-virtuous actions are. Then there's the laziness of discouragement, he said. And that you could also say is despondence. Oh, it's hopeless. There are many issues that face us individually and as beings sharing this planet, and that can be pretty overwhelming. So how do we meet those? And there's no timetable. Each of us has to come to our own way and our own understanding, but just to be able to recognize when we really feel hopeless. And I think I mentioned the other day that helplessness or hopelessness can actually lead to anger. There's actually, it can be a proximate cause of anger. There's another kind of aspect of discouragement, which is more subtle perhaps, that, oh, I'm just not good enough. I don't have the resources, or I don't have a way to do it. And that's just a kind of a wrinkle of creating the self again, making the self different from everything else. It's even, I would say, it's kind of a way of self-contempt. And there's another one that's kind of alluded to in some other translations, which is procrastination. So just, yeah, I'll get to that later. It doesn't get done. And I'm sure we all, the more we're distracted, the easier that one is to fall into, that's for sure. So that, the one about I'm not good enough, or I just can't do it, I don't have the resources, that brings us back to what we talked about yesterday and self-confidence, and somewhat today as well, the self-confidence applied to wholesome actions. I alone will do this. So I'd like to say a few words about the next chapter, which is meditation and stabilization. I've mental stabilization. I've already spoken some about possible ways to cultivate this stabilization. Focusing on others is a kind of a concentration practice. So that's the abiding in tranquility, is shamatha, samadhi, being in that stable place where we feel grounded. That also brings confidence. We feel grounded and not just willow wisping through our minds, letting thoughts just fly around and take us away. And Shantideva makes a big point of, in several verses, of saying it's superior seeing, so insight combined with stabilization, with samadhi. But it is helpful to first have the samadhi. That's what he says. Seeing the mind, where we are in our minds. Weeding says, do not perturb the mind. Do not rile up your mind. And one of the contemporary he's an Englishman in the Thai tradition, Ajahn Sumedho, says, kind of building on that, just notice what comes up to disturb the mind. Just notice what comes up. And then I always like this when Angie would say this often, when people would ask about thoughts and thinking, and she would say, Koban says, don't invite your thoughts in for tea. Don't invite your thoughts in for tea. So it can be that simple, kind of remembering something like that. And as people, this morning it was beautiful, people brought up all these phrases. Why am I acting this way? I should cherish all beings as I do myself. I should not be happy with a self-cherishing mind. We need to know when we're in a self-cherishing mind in order to make these, this clear to ourselves. So there's one phrase that I like that talks about the, that it's in a sense for me, a sense of not separating self from other, because we're frontal beings. We have our eyes in front of us, and that's how we look out and seeing others, being in relation with others. It's a soft front and strong back. And in our culture, we're taught kind of the opposite. Many people have been of like, you know, put your chest out and be, you know, but that soft front, soft belly, meeting people with a soft front and a strong back so that you know how to act when it's necessary to protect yourself or others. So that's what I have. And I look forward very much to hearing what you have. Thank you for your attention. Wendy.
Carolyn, your talks are always thought-provoking. So how would you say we can navigate this lack of separation between self the other restraints that are going on?
I didn't hear all of that. You froze up a bit. What I heard was, how can you navigate the restraints between self and other?
You know, with the mask and all the precautions. Not sharing a car with someone, not opening your house with someone.
Thank you. That's a really great question.
And I know that you have been very generous, so I know you have an answer. You opened your house when there was the fires in Santa Cruz during COVID. You took in friends.
Well, it's kind of like not a calculation. So it's not something you just feel like, I need to do this. I need to do this. And you do, and everybody was careful. I mean, it helped a lot that I trusted the friend, that we trusted each other. That helps. But the question that about the restraints, and it's really, and I'm sure you all have something to say and have felt about this. It's just because, for one thing, it's gone on for so long, but it's like, it's really interesting to live and practice our kind of practice. Buddha Dharma practice in this pandemic, because it's it just brings up how we're all so connected. I mean, that's just like number one, and that's just so obvious right from the beginning. But it also brings up how for me the the opportunity to see where being in a vulnerable place actually opens us, or can open us deeply.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.